Hello, it's Richard Herring here. Welcome to my podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. And my stand-up tour is about to begin. Can I have my ball back? First stand-up tour in 6 years. Many of you just know me from the podcast. Don't know, I've done 14 or 15 stand-up tours in my own right. I'm a brilliant stand-up comedian, and can I have my ball back? I think it's my best show ever. That's what the audiences are saying. It's about testicular cancer, but it's funny because testicles are funny even though cancer isn't. I'm really pleased with it. I'd love you to come and see it. Bring your friends. Some of the shows selling really well, some of them selling really badly. It's a traditional Richard Herring tour. But here's where I'm going to be. 2nd of May, Thursday at the Luton Hat Factory. It's a small venue, but there are still tickets left. 3rd of May, I'm at the Bury Hedge End, which is near Southampton. That's looking more full, but still some availability. 8th of May, I'm at the Leicester Square Theatre. There's about 10 tickets left for that one, though I am back at the Leicester Square Theatre in June. And then I'm at St Albans on the 9th, Gloucester on the 10th, Chorley Little Theatre on the 11th. That's sold out, but you can join the waiting list. And then the 12th of May, I'm at Glasgow. Afternoon show sold out. Evening show, extra show, put on, still with tickets. And then there's lots more. Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs. And now, enjoy whatever podcast I've given you. It's free. It's all for you. If you want to pay me back, buy a book, come and see a show. That's all I've got to say to you. Love you.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to another book club. This week we're joined by Sukh Ojla and her fantastic book, Sunny. Got her name right first time. So, hello. Hello, Sukh. How are you doing?
Hello, Richard Herring. I'm very good, thanks.
Good, very good to hear it. Now, you have been on rehearsal before. People can go back and check that. You were in the Edinburgh Fringe, I think it was 2019. We had you on when you were doing fantastically well in the Edinburgh Fringe. Can you tell us, for the people who may not be aware of who you are, a little bit about yourself, first of all, and who do you consider yourself to be, and what in professional terms, I think I'm talking now?
Oh, wow. This is like, tell us one interesting fact about yourself, isn't it? yes, my name is Sukh. I'm a writer, actor, comedian. I don't really know which order to put those in. I normally do it in order of what I like doing most at that moment in time. I am a British Punjabi. I grew up in Kent and I'm a Gemini.
Oh, lovely.
I'm looking for love.
I did notice there was a lot of astrology or mentions of astrology in your book. So I was interested in that. And so the book, Sunny, is a novel about a woman who is not dissimilar to yourself, I would say, from a casual read. Tell us what you consider the book to be, first of all.
Yeah, Sunny's a book about the kind of moment in time where some, if not most people, find themselves reflecting on the fact that they're not where they thought they would be in life, essentially. Sunny's a 30-year-old British Asian woman who's moved back in with her parents while all her friends are out getting married and having babies and buying matching earthenware. And she's back in her childhood bedroom, you know, with the old, E17 posters up on the wall and, you know, with an overbearing mum and a emotionally absent father, your typical immigrant father who shows his love through boxes of mangoes. And, you know, it's about toxic friendships. It's about relationships. It's about the way that some of us can kind of try and find love within the wrong people. And it's a little bit about mental health as well. Yeah. But I think
it, does, you know, it covers a lot of bases. It's so is it the obvious question is how autobiographical is it and how much is made up?
For legal reasons, Richard. No, do you know what? Names and places have been changed to protect the not so innocent. It's a version of me. Some of it, is loosely based on me around 10 years ago. Before I became the enlightened being who ingests psychedelic plants and goes to therapy. It's a version of me. And I moved home with my parents at 30 and I felt like a massive failure. And that's all pretty kind of spot on. And also I dated a right shower of bastards in my 20s and early 30s. So yeah, that's all the dates pretty much. I've been on those dates and there was of a worry that they'd message me and be like, hey, this is me. But it's okay, Richard, because I blocked them straight away.
Good. Well, it does feel very genuine. I kind of assumed that there must be a degree of the real you in there, just because it feels, I mean, it took me back. I mean, it made me very grateful to be in my 50s, which doesn't happen very often, because it took me back to my own 20s and 30s and the kind of nightmare of dating or not dating, you know. And I was, I think, like Sunny, I was a little bit kind of lonely and screwed up and you know, not knowing where I was going. It's exactly that thing where other people seem to have got their act together much, much quicker than you.
Yeah.
You're still floundering around. Although it's, you know, I think what I found interesting as well is obviously you're from a different generation to me. So dating has become a very different thing now with the social media aspect of it, which was probably only just coming in just as I finally settled down. I think there was a few kind of dating sites, but there wasn't anything like Tinder or any of those things when I was dating, which, you know, I find that sort of interesting. I find it kind of fascinating about whether that makes it better or worse. Cause I sort of, as a young man, I would have staying in on a weekend and, you know, it would have been great to just tweet and go, is anyone nearby who wants to go for a drink? But it doesn't seem to be, from the book, it doesn't seem to be that fantastic a way of doing anything else than hooking up with someone, maybe.
Yeah, I think most of the DMs I've got about the book have been from women going, I feel like you were on dates with me during my 20s and 30s. And quite a few people said, have we just all dated the same men? You know, because there is a pattern there, you know, and I think so many people have written about online dating, haven't they, and the pitfalls of it. And, you know, I'm currently seeing someone who I met on Tinder, and which was, you know, I thought was a hookup app. So I'm very disappointed that I now find myself in a committed relationship with a very lovely man. I was just looking to get my end away. I think it kind of shifts and changes. And now, you know, and now I've heard that there are my friends on a dating app called Raya, which is for celebrities.
Okay.
Or for like people of influence. So there's something for everyone. Can I just say, I did go on Guardian Soulmates a few years back because I thought they might be, you know, more aligned politically with myself. Not one person matched with me.
Right.
Isn't that disgusting?
That seems amazing.
I made sure I wrote about hummus. I mentioned Palestine.
Well, yeah, but I think, but that's the truth. I kind of, it took me till my 30s to really kind of work out dating even. And, you know, it is, the way to do it is just to meet as many people as possible. Yeah. And then you will find someone that you like. So it is. So hooking up with people is a great way to start, I think.
Then
you go, oh, actually.
Yeah, knock boots and then see how you go. I truly believe, this is a bit self-helpy in that phrase of like, we meet people kind of where we're at. And I think in terms of Sunny's, you know, not very happy. You know, she's lonely and screwed up, which I think, like as you said, which is a brilliant way of describing her. You know, she's got a lot going on and she's kind of distracting herself by going on these dates, which I think a lot of single people do. And sometimes not single people, as I've found on these apps. And so I think she's doing that classic thing of going, a man will make me happy or a partner will make me happy. And that will... I'm just going to say plug the hole in me, but I don't think this is that kind of show. I think it'll make me feel whole again. Yeah, you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do. But it is exactly that, you know, you're searching for something and you're, you know, but I think I sort of remember all this. Only it does sort of speak for men and women, this book. I don't know if it's aimed at women. I never really understand whether things are a chick lit or not.
No,
but
not
I hope men will read it as well, because it's, but you know, also as a man, you should read it because it's a very valuable look into the psyche of women who are dating. So if you're a man who's failing to date or a man who's screwing up, it's quite useful to see that women are in this a similar place and understanding. But yeah, you know, I've lost my train of where I was going with this originally. But I think, you know, I think you have to examine yourself really before you have to be ready yourself to be in a relationship before you're ready for anything else. I think the body image issues and stuff like that. I was always Sunny's obviously overweight and worried about that, and I spent so much time worrying about stuff like that, and you realize as you get older how little any of that's, you know, it seems so important, and you realize how unimportant it really is.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and she's kind of obviously, she's got these kind of cousins who are, you know, fit those kind of conventional kind of beauty standards. And, you know, she's got a mum going, oh, are you sure you want to eat that? And, you know, she's got friends going, well, you know, you're so bubbly and you've got a fantastic personality, you know, which all things that have been said to me. So I thought my one thing about Sunny, and this is also, if you remember the cover of Sunny, is I wanted it to show a plus-sized woman. I didn't want it to be, you know, some kind of hourglass figure, you know, aspirational body type. It's like, no, let's just have a chunky woman on there, you know, but who's not a sad sack. You know, she's not the butt of the joke, which, you know, a lot of fat women seem to be, or fat people seem to be, in books and TV shows and stuff. And she's a protagonist. She's not relegated to the funny friend.
Yeah, no, well, definitely. And I think, you know, I think that's, well, that, you know, most people aren't, you know, are in some way not filling that that norm of what's being attractive. And I think that's a big problem with dating. And there are a lot of the men who are screwed up.
Yeah.
Are screwed up because they think either they should be dating supermodels. If they're not dating supermodels, then they're failed. And then women don't, you know, then they're not being successful because they're not being realistic about who they're going to be with. Mm. So it's a fascinating subject, I think. And, you know, and that's, but yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I think, again, like I was saying, I think men should read this book. I'm sure it will be mainly a female readership, but I think things just like that men will be aware of. But I think when you really read about it, it's very well explained and beautifully written about just sort of the time taken for women to get ready for a date compared to the time taken for a man to get ready for a date.
Oh my
it's
God.
Just so insane. The disadvantage women are at in the world, and just in terms of supposedly having to look presentable.
Yeah, absolutely. I've often thought I need to invoice men, you know, when a date doesn't go well. Invoice you for my time. Do a dickhead tap. Sorry, I've got something's going on with my contact lens. So I'm just going to take it out. Yeah, you know, and the time and the money and all of that spent. And obviously, you know, we don't have to do that. You know, I'm not going to say, oh, you must be, you know, as smooth as a dolphin from the eyebrows down. But you know, we're all victim to, you know, that kind of image that we're supposed to portray as women. And I think also there's, you know, things about, you know, safety on dates as well, like without giving too much of the like, you know, Sunny's in a situation where she's like, oh, where's he going? Oh my God, I'm gonna die, and no one's gonna know, and I really hope that they choose a good photo of me in the newspaper when they report my death, you know. And I, you know, and my friend, I've got a friend, Louise, and we were talking about, I remember years ago, actually, I think we were in Edinburgh at the time, and we were talking about that there's a moment, at least one moment in, or maybe she, I can't remember if she said this or she's paraphrasing that someone else said this, but so there's a moment in every woman's life where you go, yeah, this is where I'm going to get attacked. Like this is where I die, yeah. Or this is where I'm going to get, so like it's kind of a shitty way to kind of live your life, obviously, but you kind of, yeah, if guys could read it and then not do what any of the guys do in the book, it's like a how not to date for men, really. That's how we should have marketed it.
Men are very bad at it. You know, I did, for one of my shows, I dated 50 women in 50 days. So I you know, became, so, and, but you became aware of how low the bar was and how bad most men were at dating.
Honestly,
and,
you know, just, it's in Tartarus. So, that's where it is. It's in hell. But I hear it so many times from women, and I've always, because, you know, it's either like, you know, the bar, when you're kind of dating someone or when you're looking for men online, you're like, well, you know, he's clean and, you know, he can spell. And then when they're with men, I hear a lot of women going, well, you know, obviously you've got to train them up, you know. And I'm like, well, they're not puppies. Like, honestly, I think that's such a damaging narrative.
Yeah, I think the problem, I mean, a lot of men in their 20s and 30s, I think especially, you know, and I very much include myself in this, are, you know, are still consider themselves to be children or still acting like children. So it is, you know, again, if you are a man who's wanting to take women, it's, you know, you realise things, especially through that experience about, you know, how we, I think a lot of men tend to view it as that women need to be sort of conquered somehow, or, you know, or persuaded, and I think they don't realize, as this book really shows, is that women are obviously going on dates for the same reasons as men. They might have a slightly different time frame in terms of how quickly the sex begins, but maybe not. But obviously women love having sex, and women just, you know, and the thing is, you're just trying to meet somebody that you get on well enough with, and that's what the dating is about, is to,
of course, and I think people forget that, you know, they kind of overcomplicate it, and it's like, really, we just want someone to sit on the sofa with and like eat Doritos with and watch a box set. Like, that's, it's not complicated. But I mean, you say that, I was single for 7 years, so actually writing Sunny was quite therapeutic for me, because I was like, and then he did this, and actually really early on in the writing process, I think before I'd even started writing it, I remember just messaging my editor going, I made a list of all the shitty dates I went on, but what I didn't, I was obviously messaging her work email, and some of the words I'd used were a little bit explicit, and she just messaged me back going, well, this is very interesting, also PS, I'm quite surprised this came through the firewall at work. And I've not I've not included, you know, even half of the dates I've been on in it.
And I suppose what I like about it is it is a book about friendship, really. And I think, as much as there's you know, that's Sunny's focus is the dating, that actually I really like this. It's about friendships falling apart as well, and the way that friendships you have early in your life might not see you through your whole life. As for, you know, as that very much so in that 20s to 30s to 40s, people's are going on different journeys and going in different directions, and suddenly you realize the people you're friends with at school or college or wherever are totally different to you now.
Absolutely. And I think there's just kind of no manual, is there, for like if you want to break up with a friend, you know, where you know, what if it's, if we're looking at women dumping men or whatever, it's like, well, you know, don't contact him, have a bath, eat a pizza, you know, try crystal healing. But when it's friends, it's like this just idea that we have to be friends with people for the rest of our lives, especially if you met them, you know, say at university or at school or whatever. And actually, I think that can be quite damaging, as we see for Sunny as well. It's, you know, she's, I think she's quite torn by, what do you do? There's this kind of sense of loyalty, but also, and I kind of judge my own friendships like this now. I'm like, well, if I met you now, would I like you? Would I be friends with you? Or am I just friends with you out of just a sense of duty?
Yeah. And it's, you know, and because I guess it's harder to make, Sunny does make some friends in the book, but it's harder to make friends as an adult.
Of course.
So you kind of hold on to those old friendships that may not be useful for you anymore, you know, or that may never have been, you know, like, I think that's what's interesting. You sort of realize as time goes by, you go, oh, what was I getting out of that friendship?
Yeah,
at
absolutely.
All?
Although, Richard, I've regressed and I now, like a primary school child, if I like someone, so like say if I'm at a gig or something and I meet another comedian, I'll just go up to them and be, can I be your friend? 9 times out of 10, they look terrified. So the success rate isn't great. Every now and again, someone will go, yeah, sure, here's my Instagram.
That's nice. That's if you throw enough shit at the wall. It's how you should date as well.
Exactly.
You get friends, now you get to date, just go out with everyone and see how it goes. And I suppose also there's the additional element in this, of course, of the cultural clash between the generations as well. So the mother character is an extremely. I mean, it's a very funny book. There's some sad stuff and some serious stuff in it, but it's very funny. Oh, so you will enjoy this book, and the mother character is particularly funny. But it's about the. I mean, it's the way we sort of lie to ourselves and each other, and the different faces you have to put forward in different places than your job, at home, or with your friends. And so sort of Sunny's basically lying to everyone, including herself. But then her mother tries to get involved in her dating life, obviously having come from a very different cultural background where she had an arranged marriage and has been with the father for her entire life. Against someone sort of growing up and in our modern society.
I think there's this whole idea that, you know, a lot of my friends used to say this to me when I was younger, when they'd be like, but how can your parents expect you to have an arranged marriage, or, you know, to kind of marry somebody that they approve of 100%, or like for them to be of a certain religion or, you know, background, when you were brought up in this country? And I think culture goes so deep. It's not even religion. Like, culture just is so embedded. And when you come from a family of immigrants, you know, they hold on to that culture really carefully. So all these kind of rituals and, you know, and this whole thing about marrying for love, it's a very Western concept. Even in the West, people didn't really marry for love. Like, you know, it wasn't that long ago that it was essentially a business transaction. You know, especially in South Asian culture, marrying can be very much, hopefully not business, but, you know, you're marrying families together. So Sunny being like even my mum's like this, you know, my mum would be like, yeah, of course you can choose your own husband, but he has to be Sikh and he has to be Punjabi and he has to earn over £70,000 a year and he has to. So she's kind of that generation, and a lot of people will say, oh, but our parents, you know, my parents are Indian and they're very liberal, and to them I just say, yeah, cool, just try bringing someone home who's like not the same skin color as you and see how that shit goes down, because they're saying, oh, well, you know, I don't have to have an arranged marriage, which can sometimes be, I think there's sometimes a thin line between what's an arranged marriage and a forced marriage. Whereas I think for Sunny's very much like, I know what my parents expect of me. My criteria for a partner is very, very different. How do I marry the two without pissing my mum off and like being disowned? She ends up kind of not making anyone happy because she's trying to make everyone happy.
Yeah. It's a gripping book because you're sort of trying to work out what's going to happen and who, if anyone, you'll end up with, and you know, and so it does keep you, it keeps you in there right to the end. And I think it's a sort of satisfying end, but it's maybe not the end that would be expected. So it's you know,
everyone dies.
everyone was an alien and they all had AIDS. It was terrible. It's good for that because it's more than about that anyway, the book. I think when you sit back away from it, you realize it does, none of that really matters anyway, and it's more about the journey and the realization and moving in the right direction. It's not, you know, she's just moving in the right direction, I suppose. Eventually,
I think,
after
that was
pushing against it so long.
There were two things that I really wanted for the book. One was, I didn't want any sort of Disney style ending. I wanted it to be quite realistic. And the second was, I didn't want a front cover that had the Patax font on it.
Right.
Do you know what I mean by that?
I don't. Go on, tell, explain what
you mean. So, like, when you see certain ethnic books, like books basically written by Asian people, they've got like either like a weird kind of paisley print in the background, or like it's like a kind of outline of the Taj Mahal or something like that, and then they have that same font that you find on a jar of Pataks. And I just remember saying to my editor, because she said, well, you know, we're going to start, you know, talking about the, you know, the cover and stuff. And she said, what do you want? I said, I don't want any of these things. And I just want something bright. And, you know, it's not, yeah, the main characters, you know, happens to be South Asian, but also, you know, loads of people have read it who are not South Asian, like loads of men have read it as well. And they've gone, oh, you know, probably not something I would have picked up, you know, but actually I'm really glad I did. And actually I've got a lot in common with this person as well. And I kind of wrote it for people who just feel a bit lonely and a bit kind of invisible. And that can be someone from any background.
Yeah, I mean, that's what, you know, I think that's absolutely bang on. And it's sort of weird. That's why I think the idea of dividing a book between male and female lines is kind of crazy anyway. But exactly that as well. But, you know, also you're interested. It's interesting to read about a different experience anyway, if it isn't your own culture. But I think ultimately this is... I think this will resonate with a lot of people. Anyone who's struggled with dating, who isn't the kind of person who just has gone from partner to partner or been in a happy relationship their entire lives, anyone who's, you know, had to work on themselves and work their way through stuff like this will love it, which is pretty much everyone, and certainly the kind of people who read books anyway.
Yeah.
The kind of nerd. People who are good looking don't need to read books.
But then they have shit personalities as well, don't they?
They did.
I've never met an attractive person who was interesting.
It's true, but they know Sunny is, and that's the sort of sadness of it, is that Sunny doesn't really realise that the things she's concerning herself with are not important, and that she's funny, and, you know, and I've always loved funny people, and I've always loved funny women. I've never understood the kind of men who are challenged by having, you know, why would you want to be with somebody who wasn't entertaining or interesting or clever, which is what being funny is. So it's, you know, I think that's, it's not for everyone, but it's she's clearly got so much going for her. And she's sort of looking at the wrong things, really.
Yeah, well, it's also about the kind of how we measure success, isn't it? You know, I think a lot of it is, you know, success is measured, you know, in Sunny's world and in our world, really, by, you know, getting married at a certain age and having babies and owning a property and, you know, having a career where you make good money and all the rest of it. And obviously Sunny's got none of this. I remember at one point my editor's notes being something like, relentless for Sunny, isn't it? There's a lot of shit happening to her. I was thrust at her and like chase her up a tree, and, you know, and, because I think life can be relentless, you know, and it doesn't have to be one big traumatic event, you know. It's, you know, she's, which is why I think Sunny feels a lot of guilt. Like a lot of children of immigrant parents, I certainly like still feel guilt where I'm like, well, how can I complain? Because my parents came here in the 60s and did loads of shitty jobs and worked 12 hours a day for 6 days a week. And, you know, and 60s in England, it, you know, they were living in Leeds, for God's sake, after leaving sunny Punjab. And now they're, like, you know, all working down at the mills and factories and, yeah, all this sort of stuff. And, you know, and here I am complaining about having to go to, you know, somewhere in Hertfordshire to do 20 minutes. It's like, I work. So I think Sunny feels a little bit of guilt, and I think a lot of people do. I certainly did when I was really depressed. I felt a lot of guilt about going, well, I shouldn't be feeling depressed. I shouldn't really, because I've got nothing to... I think a lot of people are good at minimising what they feel and kind of invalidating their own feelings.
Yeah, and it's, you know, and I think, you know, you're encouraged just to get on with your life and not complain about stuff. But I just think those years are so difficult, and I think...
Yeah.
I think you, but you, and maybe people forget, but maybe you only realise in hindsight, or, you know, or you get older and think, oh, but wasn't it great being 25? But I think if I really think about it, there was lots of great things, but there was lots of really terrible things about being 25.
And God,
I
like, the only thing I think I liked about being 25 was my metabolism. And like, but I was just a big angsty mess. Like, I didn't know my ass from a hole in the ground. I did. Yeah, it was terrible.
But going out, you know, going out and making the kind of mistakes that Sonny's making is part of it, and it's all, you know.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
It's I think it's very interesting, and it's, you know, there's a little bit of sexiness in there. And this isn't your fault, but this I was interested because there's a bit where you talk about kneading breasts. He was kneading her breasts, and I just think that's such a weird way of describing fondling someone. And fondling's wrong as well. There isn't a good word. Is there kneading? Isn't the right word for? Have you ever had? It's not. If you're kneading them, then that's.
Did I say kneading?
I think there's a bit with kneading breasts, but I think that I hope it was your book.
I think that sounds like.
But what's the right word for? Because it's it's not a romantic idea, is it? To knead, kneading is too much, right? I mean, I know some people like roughness, but kneading is too much.
This sounds like something that, you know, don't they do like some sort of award for like the worst sex scene? Isn't that a thing,
I think the sex scenes are pretty good. It would literally just, I think maybe I'd heard it in your book and someone else's book. I hope it was your book. If it wasn't your book, then I apologise.
I've got a copy right here. I'm going to look through it and be like, I can't believe I wrote kneading.
But what would you use instead? Because it's not a good word for it. It's the fault of literature, not of you.
Thank you. And I think it's... I think fondling is not right either, because fondling suggests just like a gentle cupping.
And there's something a bit... fondling feels a bit like there's something surreptitious going on as well. It doesn't feel like a loving act.
Yeah.
But, you know, kneading doesn't feel like a loving act.
No, it doesn't. It's quite violent. Like, when I think about how I knead dough, like, So then what is it? It's grasping? I don't know.
I think the sex scenes are pretty. They're because they're real and again you'll learn. So there's some stuff in there that's fairly graphic and surprising. I was listening to this when I was doing my park run and I nearly stopped running at one point when is there a bit about feeling the heartbeat in your vagina? That's an amazing bit. That's amazing.
And you know what? I wrote it, and I just kind of wrote it because, you know, I was like, yeah, this is going to happen. And then I sent it to my editor, and I was mortified. And at this point, my editor and I had just kind of like started, we're really good friends now. And I couldn't look her in the eye the next time I met her. And then I kind of forgot about it. And then I did the audiobook, and... the guy that was recorded the audiobook was such a lovely young lad, but young, like a lovely young lad. And normally after every chapter, he'd be like, that was great. So, like, you know, well done. Really enjoying Sunny. Yeah, well done. Like, lovely pace. And then this chapter with the kneading and the vagina heartbeat, I remember I couldn't look at him. And he just went, okay, great, let's just go on to the next chapter.
Yeah.
Oh, because it felt like I was talking dirty to him, Richard. Obviously, I wasn't. It's written in first person as well.
I think it's great. You're learning things, and I was learning things there, and it was, again, that's why I think everyone should read it, and everyone should listen
to it. Very educational.
Talking of, I listened to the audiobook, so I listened to it on the audiobook, which you read yourself very, very well, I have to say. And you are an actor as well, of course. So,
yes.
But you're very good with the accents.
Thank you.
Are you allowed to do you're allowed to do the accent, right? You're allowed to do the mum.
Yeah.
That's okay. If I did it, it would be bad, right?
Very bad.
Yeah, but you're allowed to do it.
I can do it.
But you're still allowed to do Yorkshire. You're allowed to do a Yorkshire accent and a Manchester accent, and that's not offensive to.
No.
I don't understand this politically correct. No, it's, I'm joking. You do the regional accents are fantastic. Though.
Thank you so much.
You get the characters.
God, I don't know. Bloody hell, any authors that's done their own audio, but like I loved it because also I'm a bit of a perfectionist, so I like to be kind of across everything. But at the same time, I was reading it and I was like, do you really need to use the word inevitable again? Like, yeah.
Well, I've said this on a few of these and I've said it to my, having done a few audiobooks this time with my one that's coming out, I've said, I want to do it first.
Yes.
Like as soon as it's ready, so that if there's anything like that, that we could just change yes. a few of the words, or if there's anything that jumps at you, because however much you read something when you're writing, you don't properly. I was sent the copy edit notes, and there was a couple of bits that I don't even remember having written them, kind of didn't realise were in the book. And you're going to go, oh, that is quite bad. That bit, so I'm glad someone spotted. But yes, it's good to. Did you enjoy? It's quite an arduous process actually doing the audio.
It's quite mammoth. I didn't have the beginning, I think, because it was my first audiobook as well. So I'd never recorded an audiobook before. So I was kind of learning how to do it as I was doing it. I think my worry was, because I did it over something like 4 days or something, is that I wouldn't remember the voice that I'd done for a certain character on day one. And I'm actually recording another audiobook at the moment for a wonderful author, and it's a lot less stress. And I can really enjoy it. Whereas this, I was like, oh, I could have cut that out, or I could have done this, or, you know, there was a word in there that I've never used in my life, which I think the proofreader must have like changed it. I was like, I don't even think that's a bloody word. But I think what you realise during audiobooks is how many words I just don't know how to pronounce.
Yeah, I was going to say exactly that. And I now when I'm writing, I slightly think, do I have to say that?
And also, did you have this where I'm never using long sentences again?
Right.
I use some really long sentences and then halfway through I'm like, oh.
Well, it does make you realise all those things. I think my editor was saying I'd write too many short sentences. So I went through and tried to make some of my short sentences, like I do a couple, quite a lot. Because as a comedian, I think, you want to pace things. So you sometimes, full stop, two words, full stop, two words, so that people will get the rhythm of the joke right. But, I mean, that's what I love about, authors reading their own books, especially funny books, is that the jokes properly come across, which, you can get with a good actor. But obviously, if you've written it, you really know how it's meant to be done. Yeah, and so was it difficult to get this published? Did the publisher come to you? Because obviously you'd had some successful stand-up shows, or how long has this idea been percolating, and how easy was it to get published?
I feel like a bit of a fraud saying this, but they approached me, and it was 2 months into the first lockdown. I was recovering from COVID. Because, I was one of the first people to get it, Richard, if you know that.
I heard you started it. That's what I heard. It was you and a bat. That's what I heard.
It's just me, patient zero over here. So I had it, and then I was just kind of, and you know what it was like, everybody lost their work, and, car park gigs weren't a thing yet. And I was kind of terrified and thinking, God, what am I going to do? And I got an email from my agent saying, I've just had this lovely email from a lovely lady called Sarah Adams, and she's an editor at Hodder, and she wants to know if you want to write a book. And I said, is this a bloody scam? Like, are you kidding me? It's like, are you going to ask for my account number and sort code next? Like, this is ridiculous. And I had absolutely no idea. I still don't really know how publishing works, but I've no idea that people were approached. to write books. I thought you write a novel, preferably by the seaside, and on a typewriter, and then you fall in love with a Portuguese house. No, this is Love Actually. it falls into a lake and you have to, yeah. I thought you'd write a book and then the manuscript lives in your desk for 10 years and then somebody will discover it. But you know, she came to me with a kind of rough idea of what she wanted, and she'd seen my stand-up, and she said, look, you know, I think you're a really good storyteller, and I love how you talk about dating and, you know, living at home and kind of straddling two cultures, and I think there's a story in this. And I was like, yeah, okay, if you think so, I'll give it a crack. I wrote like 2,000 words, and that 2,000 words, that first kind of sample, is actually the first chapter of the book. So it stayed in it, right, which is really lovely. But the whole kind of process of it, I can't say I enjoyed it particularly. I wish I could be like, oh, it was lovely. But no, I found it quite difficult because I think partly because it's isolating, as you know, partly because I can't concentrate for longer than like 15 minutes at a time, and partly because I thought I had to be Ernest Hemingway and, like, you know, wear big jumpers and, you know, go somewhere really remote to write it. I actually did go to Margate at one point to kind of finish it off, and that was really lovely. I didn't write any more than I was writing in my childhood bedroom in Gravesend, but like it was a nice of you. I actually think it was such an odd thing learning how to write a book whilst writing a book. And I guess that's the only way. I mean, it's the way I learn anyway, but I guess that is the only way to do it, to find out if you can do it. But I'm not going to lie, if I didn't wake up at like 4 a.m. drenched in sweat, like, you know, at least twice a week going, they're going to take the book away from me. I've spent the advance.
Well, it's very accomplished. I'm surprised. I'm surprised to hear it's your first. I've never written, and I've started writing novels, but I've never written an entire novel. And I think that must be, out of everything, that must be the hardest thing to do, I think, because even if it's based on your own experiences, it's still not the same. You know, writing a memoir, which is the last thing I've done, I found fairly easy comparatively, because it's, you know what happened, and luckily I've got like good blogs of, you know, what I was doing and stuff, so it makes it a bit easier. But to write a novel, I think, is very difficult, and it's a very accomplished novel.
I don't know if you found this as a comedian, but I would write things and then my editor would be like, we need a little bit more detail, you can't just say so and so walked into a room. And I was like, can't they just imagine it? Like, can't they just... She's like, no, you have to give the reader something. And I think I'm terrible for that. I never write enough words. I never, even when I was doing my GCSEs, like, they'd be like, you can't just double space everything and then just make it look like you've written two sides of A4. I'll be like, oh, for God's sake. So that's my terrible thing, is I never write enough.
But it's a difficult balance, because I think, you know, other books you get a book that's, I didn't notice either way in this one. I didn't like think, oh, this is a bit flowery, or this is a bit, you know, this is just a bit basic. So I think you got it right. But, you know, sometimes if people are putting in too much detail, you get distracted by the writing and you start thinking about the writing rather than getting embroiled in it. And I think too much detail can be actually distracting and take you away from your own vision of what's going on, I suppose. But yeah, you need to.
Could you write to Mr. Smith, my year 10 English teacher?
But, you know, isn't it? You know, it's amazing that it's someone who had never, you know, that this wasn't something you thought, oh, I must do this, or I've been burning to write a novel, and it's been in my desk for 10 years. You know, I think writing is a great thing to do anyway, right? For whether you're going to publish it or not, in terms of working your way through an issue. So for something like this, if it is a memoir, or if it's next week's guest, Georgia Pritchard, her book is exactly that. In fact, is just writing a book in order to get through therapy and help, you know, and help us out of a very dark situation. But often just by putting it down and working through it in your head, because I think what comedians have, which most people don't have, is we spend a lot of time self-analyzing and taking the worst parts of our life and and trying to turn them into something
you
know, funny and amusing. So it's you know, that is actually, I think, a very therapeutic thing, as much as comedians can be miserable and find that difficult. I think actually it's helped me through so many difficult times to just be able to analyze it, even if it's a few months later, which I think this is a real, really good example of, you know, a time in someone's life extrapolated, and you look back at it and go, oh yeah, okay.
I think this
is how we move on.
Therapeutic is the word, like, definitely, especially writing about how I, you know, parts of it were how I felt, you know, 10 years ago, or, you know, even less, slightly less. It was kind of lovely. I felt a little, you know, when you kind of, I don't know if you have this, sometimes you write things about something that's happened to you in the past and you feel sad for, like, past Richard. Like, you know, you kind of feel sad for, like, the previous version of yourself. So there was a little bit of that. And there was a little bit of me going, God, you were a sad sack. And there was a lot of it was me just feeling really grateful that I'd managed to kind of get my own mental health on an even keel, and that I'd sought help, and that, you know, I'd done the work, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. But also to see it written, you know, I think if you are also going through any of that, then to see someone else having gone through the same experiences, and not, because I think certainly when I was in my 20s, I thought I was a freak for, you know, if I spent a weekend at home on my own, which I did quite a lot because I was too shy to, once it had got to the weekend, I was too shy to bring anyone up and admit I was on my own, that I just thought, oh, you know, that I'm the only one, everyone else is out having a great time.
Yeah.
And of course, loads of people, you know, that's what I think, that's a great thing about the internet, and a great thing about internet dating is that at least it gives you the chance to go, okay, oh yeah, I'm not doing anything tonight either, let's just go and have a drink. You know, it does hook you up with people in a similar situation and make you hopefully have a chance to escape it, though I understand it's not a perfect system.
And it's also not as straightforward as going, I'm free, are you free? Because like we said, you know, I've then got to pluck, epilate, shave, wax everything from the eyebrows. No, I think it's if someone said to me when I was dating, I'm free tonight, do you want to go for a drink? I think they were a psychopath.
Yeah.
I'd be like, I'd need at least like 3 to 5 business days notice to prepare myself and to figure things out. So this is a really lovely way that you're describing online dating, but I just have to put you straight.
No, fair enough. No, but the book really does make you realise that as well. Yeah, that it is. Yeah. There is. Well, I suppose if it's just a drink, it's okay. As you say, you know, there's bits where Sunny's shaving up to the knees because she's not expecting any action that night or whatever. So, you know,
single girl shaving.
There are ways to get out quicker than 3 to 5 days. I think, but you know, I just think that, I mean, again, maybe go back to Rachel Paris's book a little bit, which we talked about a few weeks ago on this show. Mm-hmm. It's just the disadvantages that women are at, I think, is in all these things, and just that, just in terms of time, I think it's crazy when, and you know, it's. I wonder how it is society's view, but women are also going along with it. If all women just went, we're going to come out and we're going to be hairy and you're going to have to deal with it, we're mammals.
Yeah.
We're meant to be hairy. then I think men, I think all these things, both ways, the things that you really worry about in dating terms that aren't that big a deal. So Sunny worrying, or me or you worrying about being overweight or unattractive or whatever, those aren't the things that really matter to most people, you know, on a very basic level maybe, but actually once most men, when it comes down to it, are not going to be probably will quite like it. And I think it's certainly true that women, you know, as an overweight man, women aren't as concerned about it as men or other men or whoever you're dating, obviously, aren't worried about it either. So it's amazing how much of this is in your head. And I think that's what this book really kind of captures. What I was saying before is I think it's just, if you're going through that, you know, even, you know, because later, older people dating as well will be going through stuff like this.
Yeah.
Then, you know, it's a great book to kind of, just to see someone else doing the same thing. It doesn't even have to give answers or have a conclusion. It's just, no, this isn't just you. Mm. And that's what I think great. I think especially comedy, because comedy really goes in on those
more embarrassing moments more than other art forms, but yeah. Certainly writing as well. So it's a strong recommend.
And
I really, really enjoyed it. Generally, I DM'd you and said I was like nearly at the end, and I was very excited to find out what's going to happen. So it's a really enjoyable book, and yeah, I think everyone will get something out of it. Are you going to write another one? Are you good? Is there plans to move on to another book? Yes.
So I wasn't going to write a sequel to Sunny because I thought this could be a standalone book. But then quite a few people were like, we really love this character. We want to hear more from her. So I might write a sequel like maybe a few years down the line. But my next book is very different. My next book is actually an idea that I had rustling around in my brain. I've had it for years and I didn't really know. I was like, is it a play? Is it a one-woman show? Is it a film? Is it a TV series? And actually, it's a book. Can't say what it is, but it is very different. It's going to be set in Punjab, which is where my family are from, and it's going to be set in the 50s, so like post-partition Punjab, and it's going to be a bit darker, still funny, but like quite a lot darker than Sunny. But like in all my work that I do, whether it's plays or books or whatever I do, it's always about women not doing what they're supposed to be doing. So that's what I can say.
Right. Good. Well, I'm very much looking forward to it. Do buy Sunny by Sukh Ojla. It's fantastic. Thank you very much, Sukh, for coming on. Thank you also to Chris Evans, not that one, for all his work in helping us get this together. We'll be back next week with Georgia Pritchard.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thanks for listening. Do come and see me on tour. richardherring.com/gigs is the easiest way to find out where I'm going. And gofasterstripe.com, you can buy books and downloads. And just tell your friends about the podcast. If you can't make it to the tour show, if you don't want to buy any products, then every time you listen to an advert, you're helping us make more podcasts with a very, very tiny micro payment. So thank you very much for that. I love you all. It's lovely to meet you on tour, by the way. Hello to everyone who's said hello so far. I do come and say hello after the show. If you enjoyed it, if you want to see me, that'd be nice. You can get a selfie. I don't care. I'm a selfie whore. All right, see you soon.